sermon today, it revolves around, as I said, what we're doing this summer, and we will be doing it next summer as well. And it starts out in this area, usually around the time of Memorial Day. Memorial Day is when people in this part of the United States traditionally plant their garden. And we have always done that as well, although we have certain plants that we would plant earlier because they can withstand the frost. But there are a lot of plants you can't plant until Memorial Day. In the South, when we lived in Georgia, the time for planting was Good Friday. You know, we didn't know what was good about it necessarily, but that was when people traditionally planted their garden. We used to have a church member in Elmira who had his own greenhouse, and in that greenhouse, he would start in February, March, and he would plant seeds, and he would have containers and containers and containers of different plants that he would put out and sell. It was his business to grow plants and to sell plants, especially in the spring of the year. And his name was Bill Raymond. It's a seasonal subject. You know, certain subjects that we speak about at various times are for particular reason. We have Pentecost is a season, and we think about at Pentecost certain seasonal subjects the Bible identifies for us. We count 50 days from the days of unleavened bread, and the 50th day is the day of Pentecost, and the day of Pentecost was a time of harvest because there were two harvests in the land of Palestine. The first harvest was the spring harvest, which was completed by the time of Pentecost, the 50th day. It began on the first day and was completed on the 50th day. But then there's the great fall harvest, which is completed at the time of the Feast of Tabernacles. And so when that harvest comes in, it is symbolic of what ultimately God is going to do in his kingdom. There's going to be a time when all of mankind is going to be resurrected from the dead. We talked about death and the last enemy that shall be overcome being death. All of mankind is going to be resurrected from the dead, and there will be a time of learning for all of them. They have not perished. They have the opportunity, and they haven't had the opportunity yet. You know, they have been born, lived, and died without the opportunity to ever know and understand God's truth. And we can go through nations and nations and generations where they never had heard the truth of God in places like China, India, you know, big, huge parts of the population of mankind. They're all going to be resurrected. And you can read about that in Ezekiel 37. You can read about that in Revelation verse 20. They're all going to be resurrected from the dead, and they're going to be given the truth of God and have the opportunity to become obedient to God and the opportunity to receive eternal life. That's God's plan. I mean, there's no equivocating about that. That's clear in the Bible, as clear as anything can be. And God has called a few people in the early harvest, the Pentecost harvest, the first harvest, but only a few people to be important leaders and teachers in his kingdom when those masses of humanity are resurrected. So certain subjects are seasonal. There is a subject that I wanted to talk to you about today, which is the land Sabbath. You know, we talk about the Sabbath. The Sabbath day is a very important command. Exodus chapter 20 tells us all about the Sabbath. There is also, when we get to Leviticus 25, an instruction about the land Sabbath. We'll be looking at that instruction in this sermon, and we will see what the Bible has to say about it. This is for us, and everybody counts it from the year of their baptism, our seventh year. And so we don't, you know, every year we're in a very conspicuous location where our house is. And we have out beside our house what most people would call a major garden. And in that major garden, we have lots of different things. And we prepared the soil very well some 40 years ago. And it continues to bear very fruitfully. And people who come, passers-by, and from time to time, during the summer months when the garden starts to look pretty prolific, people stop and ask about our garden, and they do that. Lately, we haven't planted this year, and people that we're meeting on the street are saying, "What happened to your garden? Where's your garden? Why isn't your garden there this year? We look forward to seeing your garden." People we don't even know are saying this. You know, we met some this past week who asked that question. And then we have a chance to explain to them that in Leviticus 25, you know, that their eyes closed, their ears fold over. But at least we have given them a little bit of information about what the Bible has to say about the land Sabbath. But it isn't just every seventh year. The Bible does say every seventh year you shall let the land have a Sabbath. A Sabbath, you know, the Sabbath command in Exodus chapter 20 is in relationship to the land also spelled out there. But also on the, can hardly believe it, 50th year. For Hazel and myself, this year's our 49th year. Next year will be our 50th year since we were baptized into God's church. 50 years. 49th year, you practice the land Sabbath. And then, just for good measure, after 49 years, on the 50th year, you do the same thing again. So they won't be seeing our garden again for another year. At least that's our intention at this point. The land Sabbath is, at this time, and I used this phrase during the sermonette, a voluntary practice. Only a few people, even in God's church, of the number of people that are in God's church, only a few of them are practicing the land Sabbath today. It's voluntary. We have decided we want to practice it because we feel that there are certain spiritual benefits that come from practicing it, even though it's not required. Voluntary means it is not required, but voluntary also means that if you want to do it, you may. And so we want to do it. It's not prohibited either. It's not required, but it's not prohibited. So we're doing it. And so we want to observe this practice. I'll give you a little bit of information about why I ended up with this subject today. Before the day of Pentecost, I gave a sermonette about Deland Sabbath in Elmira. I felt it was totally inadequate because I could not cover the subject in a sermonette. And so I have taken that same subject and I've expanded it out. We won't be able to cover it either, but we'll come a little closer maybe in a sermon than we would have come in a sermonette. So let's look. Here's the purpose of the sermon. Look at the Bible instructions, and we look for God's instruction about everything that we do. We're primitive Christians. We look at the Bible instructions regarding the land Sabbath and answer the question, because it brings up a question. If this is in the Bible, why is it we're not practicing it today? And we're going to see it's in the Bible. There's no disputing that it's in the Bible, but the majority of people in God's church are not practicing it today. And we want to answer the question about why it's not required to be kept today in God's church. So let's begin by looking at some of the scriptures in Leviticus chapter 25. Let's read the first four verses there. And this is comes from the highest source of authority according to what the Bible has to say. The Lord spoke unto Moses. So this is not Moses' ideas or thoughts that he conjured up. These are, according to what it says here, directly from God, from the mouth of God to Moses. The Lord spoke to Moses in Mount Sinai. What happened in Mount Sinai? Well, the Ten Commandments were given to Moses at Mount Sinai. The covenant, the Old Testament covenant, was agreed to between God and the Israelites at Mount Sinai. It set their history for the next few hundred years as a nation. And there at Mount Sinai, God spoke to Moses, saying, verse 2, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, this is the Old Testament children of Israel. There is, I would argue with you, a New Testament manifestation of the children of Israel, which are those people whom God has called today. He created an Old Testament group as an example of what he was ultimately really going to do with mankind today. He would have a New Testament group which is typified by the children of Israel. Say to them, when you come into the land, it's an important phrase, we'll be coming back to it. When you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath. Well, every week they were supposed to keep a Sabbath, and that Sabbath was identified emphatically to them by the fact that on 6 days during the week, God gave them manna, the food that they had to eat. They had to go out and collect 6 days a week. But on the seventh day of the week, no manna. No manna. They would have but the opportunity to collect twice as much on the sixth day of the week, we would call Friday, was there. And they better do it, or they would be hungry on the seventh day because there wouldn't be any food. The other thing about the Sabbath observance and manna is if they tried to collect more than they needed on the first 5 days of the week and save it over so they didn't have to do it the next day, it didn't work. As it says in the Bible, it stank and bred worms. But when Friday came, they could collect twice as much, no stinking and no worms. Pretty interesting how God identified the Sabbath day to them, and this continued for 40 years. They went through this procedure every week for 40 years, and God emphasized to them the importance of the Sabbath day. That's the commandment you find in Exodus chapter 20. We won't go there and look at the Sabbath commandment, but there's a lot of information, a lot of things to note there, as we're noting a few things here in this particular set of scriptures. In Exodus chapter 20, it tells a lot. There's a lot of rhetoric about what to do and how to keep the Sabbath. When you get into Deuteronomy, it's not identical with what it says in Exodus. So there's something to think about. Why was the Sabbath a little bit different in Deuteronomy than it was in Exodus chapter 20? Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. But it's not every week. It's done on a cycle of 7 years. 6 years shall you sow the field, and 6 years shall you prune your vineyard, and gather in the fruit thereof. And that's an important phrase here, too. Gather in the fruit thereof. But the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest for the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. And we're going to see that, you know, as God identified in those days, the weekly Sabbath, by providing manna 6 days during the week and not providing it on the seventh day of the week. So he was doing something similar here by saying, you can bring all that you plant your field, you can bring everything in, prepare it to be used throughout the year, or even for 2 years, or even in our case, it's going to be for 3 years. Okay. Identifying also that. This is in Leviticus chapter 25. The book of Leviticus is the first word, which if you read from commentaries on it, Wyagra, W-Y-A-G-R-A, I believe is the way it's spelled. I might be remembering the spelling incorrectly. And that word in Hebrew is translated, means, and God called. So the book of Leviticus is written to those whom God called. Those people whom God called. Now those people in the Old Testament were not called. They weren't called. They were physically a part of a nation, descendants of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the tribes of Israel. But they weren't called. Calling is a spiritual thing which comes later, a couple of thousand years later. And it's what you're doing here now. God called you here. God called, and the name of the book, therefore, was translated into Leviticus. When was the book of Leviticus given to the Israelites? Well, it was given to them early in the period after they left Egypt. Early in the Exodus. At Mount Sinai, after they crossed the Red Sea, they went to Mount Sinai. God gave them the Ten Commandments, made the covenant with them, and so that was right after the time that they had left Egypt. Commandments were given there. In Leviticus, you start going through the book of Leviticus, And you get to Leviticus chapter 23. In Leviticus chapter 23 are the occasions, but God identified his holy occasions from the book of Genesis. Long before there was an ancient nation of Israel, he framed the heavens, it says there, in a certain way to define the Moeds. And so the Moeds are God's holy occasions. That's the way to translate the Moeds. You'll find it, I think it's Genesis 1:26. It says, God put two lights in the heavens, the sun and the moon, to define the Moeds. And so the holy occasions are listed. It starts out in Leviticus chapter 23. God spoke to Moses, and he said, speak to the children of Israel, these are my Moeds. Well, it doesn't necessarily come through that clearly in the translation. It says, my feast. Feast, yes. And it talks about the weekly Sabbath as the first one of those occasions. But then it goes through sequentially every one of the subsequent occasions that God expects for us to keep. All in one place, one chapter in the Bible. There's a lot more information about them in addition to what's there, but in that one chapter, they all are listed and when they are. What to keep, and to a certain degree, how to keep them. So that's what happens in Leviticus 23. I'm sort of building up here to Leviticus 25, because Leviticus 25 is what we're talking about. Leviticus 23, holy occasions. Leviticus 24 contains some observances having to do with the tabernacle and the sin of blasphemy. But then follows that, Leviticus 25. And a large part of the context in Leviticus 25 is the land Sabbath. As I said, the church today is not keeping, as a body, the land Sabbath. A few people, like Hazel and myself, we think that we want to do it because we think we gain by having done it. And this was based on a judgment given by Mr. Herbert Armstrong, I don't know, probably back in the 1940s. I don't know the chronology of it that well. But I know it was some long time before we came into the church that the land Sabbath was not being kept as a as an element in the doctrines of the church. And here's what Mr. Armstrong had said about it sometime prior to that. Looking at Matthew chapter 7 and verse 20, I don't know that he used this scripture, but I will. There it says, by their fruits shall you know them. So, this is about false prophets. But it's a principle, isn't it? That by the fruits that we observe, we will know certain things. Leviticus 25, verses 19 through 22. This is what God had said about keeping the land Sabbath. The land shall yield her fruit, talking about during the normal years of planting, you shall eat your fill and dwell therein in safety. And then if you get nervous, it says, essentially, that's what it says, if you shall say, what are we going to eat in the seventh year? You said, don't plant the land, let the land have its own Sabbath and rest. But what am I going to eat then? I mean, I need to eat. And so this was a question. This was a valid, physical, tangible question that would come up for every one of us, I am sure. What shall we eat in the seventh year? Behold, we didn't plant, we shall not sow nor gather in our increase. That's what you told us. What am I going to do about that? Verse 21. I, God says, will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year. God promises to bless the sixth year and provide enough during the sixth year so the land could have its Sabbath in the seventh year, and you just collect it up and be ready to eat it without working that seventh year. I command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it shall, and this is a little bit further down in Leviticus 23, because it's even talking about the Jubilee year. It shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. So that's where Hazel and I are. We're sitting here. So far, we don't look like we've starved to death, but we're on the way. This is the first year. By the time we get to 3 years, maybe we're going to look pretty svelte. I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. And you shall sow the eighth year. So you don't plant the sixth year, you don't plant the seventh year, you can plant the eighth year, but the harvest from the eighth year, almost into the ninth year, 3 years, you don't have fruit from the earth. You shall eat of old fruit until the ninth year. Until her fruits come in, you shall eat of the old store. Well, retreating here in this message to what we said in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 20, by their fruits you shall know them. Mr. Armstrong looked, and God was not providing those blessings to the farmers in the church during the sixth year, for the seventh year, let alone for the 49th and 50th year. Farmers in the church were being forced into bankruptcy. There was not this blessing, even though they practiced it for quite a few years, there was not this blessing being given to those farmers. So Mr. Armstrong said, God is not blessing it. He promised that he would. There's something that we are not doing correctly or don't understand correctly. And so we will cease practicing this and forcing our farmers into bankruptcy. And so that judgment was made. The Bible gives the church the right to make certain judgments, doesn't it? Matthew chapter 16, verses 16 through 19. Now here's a situation where, in this particular sequence, Christ changes the name of Simon to Peter. And he says here in this particular sequence that Christ is the rock. Peter is the pebble. No. Petra, meaning big, huge rock. Petra, meaning tiny stone. Christ says of himself, he is the big rock, and Peter is the little stone. Let's read it in verses 16 through 19. Simon Peter answered and said, you are the Christ. And Christ had asked him, who do people say that I am? Simon Peter answered and said, well, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus answered and said unto him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed it unto you, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say to you that you are Peter. Upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the grave will not prevail against it. I will give unto you the keys of the kingdom. Whatsoever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatsoever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. And so Mr. Armstrong utilized that authority at this time. And from that time on, the land Sabbath was not practiced in the modern era, based on a judgment from Mr. Armstrong. But we continue, as I said, a few people continue to do it, not because we're more sanctimonious than others, but because we think that there can be a benefit involved in doing it. We don't want to be righteous over much, and so we hope we're not doing that, but we still want to do it because we look for a spiritual benefit in having done it, even though it's not required. We know it's not required. We don't think it's forbidden either. Here's the risk, being righteous over much, and there's an example given here in Luke chapter 18, verses 10 through 13. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee, the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I am not as other men, extortioners, unjust, they're adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast two times in the week. You know, I practice a land Sabbath. Everybody else doesn't do that. I thank you, I'm not like they are. That would be kind of a risk that we could put ourselves into in practicing this. We could feel like we're somehow better. And we don't think that. We don't think that. We want to avoid that. We want to avoid being righteous over much, but still, we want to seek the spiritual benefits that God, I think, will have for us if we do it. The publican, standing afar off, would not lift so much as his eyes, but smote his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And Christ goes on to say, the publican goes up justified, but the Pharisee does not. There's a contrast there. I'd like to get a little bit here into the specifics of what it says in Leviticus 25. We already read verses 1 through 4, and 6 years you plant, seventh year you let the land rest. Those are specific time intervals, and they dovetail along with the weekly Sabbath. But I'd like you to notice something here too. What is it talking about that you do and don't do? The seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest of the land. You shall neither sow the field nor prune the vineyard. Two specific things. Neither sow the field nor prune the vineyard. We were thinking about what we need to do in keeping the land Sabbath, if we want to keep it, which we did want to do. What about the thing that's MIA, missing in action? There's something missing in action here. Fruit trees. You can sow the, it said, don't sow the field. Don't prune the vineyard. What else? Well, we have quite a few fruit trees in our yard. And I was kind of searching to find out what the Bible had to say about the land Sabbath and the fruit trees. And I had done this in years gone by. But I had to go back and search it out again. Sometimes things sort of slip through the bucket. The bucket has a hole in it, you know. And you might carry things around in it for a while. But even if it's a slow leak, eventually the bucket becomes empty. So I had forgotten about the things which have to do about fruit trees. We've got 5 apple trees, and they're sizable apple trees. We've got 5 peach trees, and 2 of them are really sizable for peach trees. And we have a couple of pear trees. And in past years, the last 2 or 3 years, we've had hardly any fruit on those trees. This year, the blossoms on those trees were absolutely phenomenal. And we've got so much fruit on those trees now that we're going to have to spend from now until October pulling the fruit off because the tree won't be able to bear it all. It doesn't address, it says, don't plant the field and don't prune your vineyard. But it doesn't mention fruit trees. We did read earlier, and I'll repeat it here, Leviticus 25, verse 5, that which grows of its own accord of your harvest, don't reap it. Don't reap it. Neither the grapes of your vine undressed, neither gather the grapes of your vine undressed. It is a year of rest unto the Lord. But it says here in verse 6, something that you can read over, and if you don't understand understand what's being said, the language is a little bit confusing. It says, the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you. It says, don't sow it, don't reap it, don't prune your vineyards. But it says, the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you. Now what's the distinction there? There's a distinction. There's reaping and there's gathering. And then there is that which grows of itself shall be meat for you. You can eat it. That's what it's saying. It's just saying, you don't go out there, harvest it, bring it in, and make pickles for the next 3 years in your kitchen because it came up of itself. You can eat it as it grows, but that's it. You let the rest of it. It's meat for you. You can eat it, but you can't gather it in. You can't turn your grapes into wine that you're going to drink for the next 3 years. That which you eat or drink at that time, it is meat for you. But it goes on to say, for you and for your servant, you have people that work with you or work for you, and we have a friend that comes, really a friend, wouldn't call him a servant, but we do pay him to come and work around our house. He's entitled to take anything that grows as a volunteer himself. Your servant or your maid, I guess manservant or maidservant, for your hired servant, for the stranger that sojourns with you. It is meat for all of those people. Whatever the field volunteers, you may not plant it, but if it comes up, volunteers, then you may eat it. And we have this, as I said, one patch about this big around where 100 plants have come up, and we don't know what it is. It looks like it could be a squash or a cucumber. And we're going to have to wait and see as it develops what it actually is. But that should be for us meat. You know, we can eat that. But we can't harvest it and save it in that way. Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you the servant, your maid, hired servant, for the stranger that sojourns with you. Verse 7, for your cattle. Well, we don't have any of those, so we don't have to worry about that. For the beasts that are in the land. And we've been fighting the deer off for the last 6 years, trying to keep them out of the garden. And now it says, you let the deer come in there and eat this. It's meat for the deer as well as for you. The beasts that are in the land, shall all your increase be thereof be meat. Dick Close had the nerve to ask me when I read this in Elmira if that included woodchucks. And, of course, he knows that one year, probably 10 years ago now at least, Hazel says 20, I shot in a year's time, I shot 100, just over a year's time, I shot, well, they weren't all shot, but I exterminated 100 woodchucks in our yard. So Dick wants to know, is it, well, you going to let the woodchucks do it then? So our former friendship has been terminated. Verse 8 through 11, number 7 Sabbaths of years unto you. 7 Sabbaths of years, that's 7 times 7 years, 49 years. 7 times 7 in the space of 7 Sabbaths of years shall to you be 49 years. Verse 9, then you blow the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month in the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet, and hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a Jubilee unto you, and you shall return every man to his possession, and you shall return every man to his family. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. You shall not sow nor reap that which grows of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in of your vine undressed. What about trees? I kind of didn't answer the question about trees. Let's look back in Leviticus 19 and verses 23 through 25. Trees travel under a different set of rules. When you shall come into the land. There's that phrase again. When you shall come into the land. And shall have planted all manner of trees for food. Then you shall count the fruit thereof as uncircumcised. Fruit, didn't know fruit had to be circumcised before you could use it. But some of the commentators draw a comparison between knocking the fruit off and circumcising a male child. The first 3 years, you knock it off. You eliminate it. Count the fruit thereof as uncircumcised. 3 years shall it be uncircumcised to you? See, this is not said about grapes. This is not said about the fruit, the planting the land or gathering the fruit therein, but it is said about trees. All manner of trees for food. You don't eat the fruit for the first 3 years. It will be uncircumcised to you. It shall not be eaten of. The fourth year, all the fruit thereof shall be holy to praise the Lord withal. The fourth year, it's holy. I don't know what that means. I didn't research it, but I have a feeling it means in the fourth year, you take that, you harvest that fruit and you take it to the temple and give it to the Levitical priesthood there in the temple. And in the fifth year shall you eat the fruit. So after on the fifth year, you may eat the fruit off of your tree. And it does not seem that there's any restriction from then on for all of the years of the life of that tree. So once you've gone past the fourth year, it's unrestricted, as far as I can see. Trees, therefore, I would conclude, might be eaten and gathered in during the years of the land Sabbath. So here's the conclusion. The land Sabbath, typically planted for 6 years, the seventh year it's to have its rest. Now I looked at some, I hope I'm not circumventing the law here, I don't think I am, but I looked at, okay, if it's the land that is to have a Sabbath, if I plant and plant something but not plant in the land which I have planted in for 6 years, would that be acceptable? Seems to me that it would be. We did two things. We took 11 pots, sizable pots, filled them with potting soil, which we bought from the feed and potting soil store, brought them in, and we planted some, I think we planted 4 tomato plants, 2 cabbage plants, and probably 6 or 7 pepper plants, or maybe even a few more than that, because you can put, in one pot I put 6 pepper plants, and a couple of eggplants, and we've got those sitting on our deck. They aren't in the land. The land is having a rest, but we have something growing there on the deck. We especially Hazel, is related to a cousin in South Georgia we visited maybe 5-6 years ago, and he had planted his tomatoes in straw. He had these big round bales of straw. He had 4 or 5 of them sitting there. And not straw, I'm sorry, hay. He had planted in hay. He had planted tomatoes in hay. The tomatoes had grown very well in the hay, and he had had a good crop of tomatoes. So I said, I wonder what happens if I plant something in hay. Well, there were 6, I thought there were 7, but there were 6 bales of straw sitting out behind our barn. We took those bales of straw over and where we could get them into the full sun, and I wet them down good, and I planted plants in the straw. Hazel looked online and corrected me about planting in hay. So I ended up having to plant, according to Hazel's instructions, in the straw. And so now we are waiting to see if those plants will grow in the straw. And so I was out there. It isn't the easiest thing in the world to dig holes in a compressed bale of straw so that you can plant the root of the plant down in the straw. And I put a little potting soil to fill the hole up. And I did it with a kitchen knife. And I was getting really tired of doing that by the time I got those six bales of straw planted. And so as I was doing it, a volunteer came by. His name was Jackson. And he had volunteered to fertilize the lawn in our yard. And he had a spreader, and he comes pushing that spreader by me. He stops and looks at me. He said, he saw that I was planting stuff in the straw. He said, I didn't think you did that this year. So I said, well, it says we let the land have its Sabbath. But I'm not planting in the land. I'm planting in this bale of straw. And so if I don't plant in the land and the land has its Sabbath, would that be okay? Got a little bit of a thoughtful look for a minute, and he says, seems reasonable to me. So we'll find out how that works out. Let's look again at Leviticus 25 and verse 2. I told you we'd come back to this phrase. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, it's a when then. This verse is a when then. When you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. Now, it was 40 years for the ancient Israelites after that before they came into the land. Moses was given this instruction at Mount Sinai. But they were banished into the wilderness to wander for 40 years before they went into the promised land. And they couldn't practice this until they went into the promised land, could they? They didn't really have a place to plant a field. They were on the move. You know, they were nomads in the desert, moving from place to place, encamping, staying there for some time, and then moving on. The tabernacle would be moved. There were certain rules about moving the tabernacle. So they were doing this for 40 years. And it says, when you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. Is there a parallel for us today? You know, has God given us the kingdom yet? When you come into the kingdom, which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. I consider this as maybe a suggestion to reading this and understanding why it was God didn't bless it at that time. I would surmise from this, and this is based on my reading of it. I could be wrong, and God can show me that I'm wrong. But as I read it right now, I don't see God saying he would bless it during this era, because where do we stand in the parallel between them? We are in the wilderness, right? We're in the time of testing and trying. God did not promise to do that for them during that 40-year period, but only when they came into the land. It's a when then. When you come into the land, which I will give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. So if I look at it that way, I'm concluding that it's something we'll do in the kingdom, but probably not something for today. For that reason, I would submit to you, based on what I read, that God was not intending that it should be done in this period of time. We're now in the period of trying and testing. But when we come into the land, which God will give us, the kingdom. That's what the promised land was, right? It was a prophetic indication of ultimately them receiving, of us receiving the kingdom of God. It was for them a prophecy about that which was coming at the end of this age. And so that would be my understanding of it.